Hi, you're listening to Youth Beat Radio. I'm your host, Anna Siriano. Today, we're talking about voting. Elections are coming up on November 8th, and I decided to talk to Nathan Bird, the Deputy Director of Franklin County Board of Elections, and Peg Rosenfield, Election Specialist at the League of Women Voters of Ohio. Essentially, I wanted them to explain the ins and outs of voting to encourage those who have never done so before to finally take the leap and vote in their first election. Now, since elections are so soon, registration has already ended, but you can register for the next election, which happens to be the presidential election, anytime from now until 35 days beforehand. Here are the staggering facts about voter turnout among young people. According to Project Vote, 21 million eligible voters between ages 18 and 29 did not vote in the 2008 presidential election, and turnout is consistently 20% lower than any other age group.
You know, I think among young people, unfortunately, it's just apathy. I just think that they're not that interested in voting. It certainly isn't difficult. I mean, it's not hard to vote. It's not hard to register. And as we've discussed, there are a multitude of different ways to do it. And so I think with young people, it's apathy. I look back recently at some of our trends with some young voters, and one thing that stood out to me was that when they're 18 and 19 years old, turnout is still low, but it's okay. And then it drops off as they get into their 20s. And I think what you're seeing is a situation where people are eager to vote the first time, but then they sort of lose interest. And that's unfortunate because it should be the exact opposite. They should have more interest in voting every single year. But they really need to be more interested than anybody because all the issues that these folks that get elected deal with affect them just like they affect anyone else. And so, you know, this is a large county in Franklin County. We have 750,000 voters. About 178,000 of those voters are people in the 18 to 29 age range. And so we really need them to participate. And so we have a large group of young voters here in Franklin County. And unfortunately, the turnout rate is not very high among them. And so, you know, there are national organizations that study why. There are statewide organizations that study why. Our job is to serve the voters who participate, but we would love to see turnout be higher among all ages. But young people need to understand that every election year, whether it's presidential or not, is going to impact their quality of life. So we would encourage them to participate.
Like Nathan said, there are numerous reasons why people don't vote, and many organizations studying the reasons. Young people might feel their vote doesn't create change, or that the issues don't apply to them, or that they don't understand politics. Peg Rosenfield has some blunt advice for young voters, especially those who are still in high school or even college.
Well, if I could be a little bit smarty, the first thing would be pay attention in government class. Your teachers did probably try to explain all this to you. But as far as I can see, nobody paid attention in government class, including when I was teaching it. You just need to pay attention to the news. Our government works to a great extent because we have a free press. And the free press is keeping the government honest. So take advantage of that. And all I can say is read, read, read. And go to discussions. If there's a candidate's night, go ask them questions. You can be polite, but you can challenge them. Why do you do this? Why did you support that? Or why did you oppose this? You know, I know people who spend a lot of time on football statistics. Or you're working hard to, you know, whatever your major is, whether it's history or chemistry or whatever. Well, is this as important as that? Because it's deciding how your government works or doesn't work.
Even so, realistically, you may not be able to understand all of the issues on the ballot or who every candidate is in their platform. When you get into the booth to vote, you may be seeing it for the first time. Nathan stresses that you should prepare as much as possible for voting and that you can practice voting on the Board of Elections website. Peg offers some sound advice for those times when you just don't know whether to say yes or no.
Vote for what they do know.
Okay.
You don't, there's no test. You don't have to answer all the questions. If you're not comfortable, just skip it. At the end of it, the machine or thing will probably tell you, hey, you didn't vote for this. All you have to do is go back essentially and say, yeah, I know, and that's what I meant to do. It's called undervoting, and it's perfectly legal. well, there are a lot of misconceptions about it. There are people who think that you have to vote in a primary in order to vote in the general. No. No, you don't. No. You want to skip something? You can skip it. Want to skip the whole primary? You can do that. I won't approve of it, but that's your business. And I won't know the difference. What I try to tell people, if you get to a polling place, from there on, they should walk you through it. That's why we pay poll workers to be there. And frankly, they are so thrilled when somebody young comes in, particularly a first-time voter. They'll almost get over, climb over the table and kiss you, because these people really believe in this. And to have a first-time voter come in, it's like, wow, this is an honor to be helping somebody the first time through this procedure. So it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun on the phone bank. We're all volunteers, and these people come and they work 2 or 4 hours answering these telephones. We have no trouble recruiting people to do this. It's the most rewarding thing you can do, because you're helping people to vote.
So basically, Peg is saying that when you go to vote, you have a team of people behind you who are passionate about the political process and who are very willing to help you through every step. But let's back up a bit. Before you can even think about voting, you have to be registered. Along the street, especially during big elections, there are usually booths set up for students to register. The League of Women Voters is one of the groups that sets up these booths to ensure that voters get registered.
The League is known all over the country for doing voter registration. And the more of this that we do, the fewer people show up at the Board of Elections to register. And we do registration drives, and we have a very good, long-standing reputation that we do them right. If we take your registration, we will get it turned into the board on time.
Registering to vote takes about 30 seconds. It's incredibly easy. We have a form that you can actually fill out on our website. You can get them from various public agencies. For high school students, every high school has registration forms. And you just answer a couple simple questions and fill out your information. The only identifying information that's asked for is the last 4 digits of a social security number or a driver's license number, which can then we use to verify that the person is who they say they are. We do require an original copy of that registration. We have to have an actual signature on file. And so it takes just a couple seconds to fill out a form, mail it back to us here at 280 East Broad Street in Columbus, and then we will have that person registered in our system no longer than 20 days after we receive the form. And so registration is extremely simple. It's not difficult at all.
So if you have the inkling to register, it takes no time and no effort to find a place to do so. After you're registered as a voter, you can vote during the next election. And like registration, there are numerous ways to vote.
In terms of the different ways of voting, it could not be more convenient than it is in Ohio. Right now we have a 35-day early vote window, and so our office is open from 8 to 6 every day from the 35th day out for early voting. We've had about an average of 150 people or so come in every day to vote. We'll also be open some the next 2 Saturdays from 8 to noon, and we'll also be open on Sunday, October 30th for 4 hours. And so there's a number of different ways to vote early. You can do it by mail, or you can come in person and vote. A lot of people more and more often are choosing to vote by mail because it's really the simplest way. You send in an absentee application, which can also be downloaded from our site, and then we mail a ballot to you, and you have, you know, until election day to return it. And so what we're finding is that a lot of people request that ballot, hold on to it for a few weeks while they study the candidates and issues, and then send it back to us whenever they're ready. And then, of course, the traditional way is Election Day. All of our polling places are open from 6:30 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. on Election Day. And so in Ohio, we have Election Day, early voting by mail, and early voting in person. And so there's really no excuse for somebody not to participate. It's about as easy as it can be, and we try to make it as convenient as it can be here in Franklin County.
With early voting by mail, students who want to vote as citizens of their hometown can easily do so.
A lot of students choose to keep their permanent residence where they're from as their voting residence. And that's okay. People do that all the time. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, when you go back and forth from school to home, you kind of have two locations, and a lot of folks choose to keep their – I did that when I was in college. I kept my Licking County at the time home address as my voting residence. And no-fault absentee voting makes that very easy to continue to participate to vote. All they need to do is request an absentee ballot be sent to them in the mail, and they'll be able to vote. You know, it's probably best for students who think they're going to stay around the Central Ohio area to go ahead and get registered and participate and start electing officials here. But students do that a number of different ways. It's really up to each individual.
During the odd number years, voters generally vote on local and state issues and local candidates. This is what's called an off-year election. Despite this, there has been a promising amount of early voters in Franklin County.
We'll probably crack the 60,000 mail ballot request by the end of today or tomorrow. Right now, I think we're just about 57,000 ballots requested. And that is far, far higher than we've ever seen in an off-year election. In all of 2009, only 43,000 people voted by mail. In all of 2007, only 25,000 people voted by mail. And so right now, we're 20 days out from the election, and we're closing in on 60,000. So we're obviously going to shatter our previous record for an odd year. And I think that the reason for that is partially because people are just getting more and more used to voting early, and so it's natural for them to understand how to do it. And I also think that the issues on the ballot this year, which you don't typically see quite as many contested issues, are turning people out. And so, yeah, we're on pace to shatter what we previously see in a year like this.
You're listening to Youth Beat Radio. So now we'll get to the nitty-gritty of this year's ballot. Nathan explains the three statewide issues and some of the candidates running for office, but you can find every candidate and issue that you will be voting on under the 2011 Election Information tab of the Board of Elections website.
The issues that are getting the most attention are the statewide issues. We have an abnormally high number of those this year compared to other years, and issue one would increase the age limit for judges from 70 to 75. Right now they can't run for re-election after they're 75 years old, and this would, or after they're 70, and this would increase that to 75. That one's not getting a lot of attention, but it is on the ballot. Mm-hmm. Issue two is probably the most hotly contested issue. That is the referendum against Senate Bill 5, which tweaked some collective bargaining laws in the state for public employees. That's probably the one that's getting the most attention and the one that's generating the most voter turnout. And then issue three would allow voters in Ohio to opt out of certain provisions of the federal health care bill that was passed in 2009. On our website, we have sample ballots. And so registered voters can log into our site, which is vote.franklincountyohio.gov, type in their name, and actually view their sample ballot. And there's a description of each statewide issue that's on the ballot as well. So those are the three big ones. We have numerous local issues on the ballot. Odd years are actually our most complicated years because every local jurisdiction has the ability to put something on the ballot, and so you see a lot more local candidates and local issues in the odd years. And so a person can get onto our site, see their personalized ballot, and find out what may be on the ballot in their locality. Next year we have the presidential election, which comes along every 4 years. We'll also be electing a U.S. senator, all of our congressmen, and all of our state legislative seats. Those are the years that get the most attention. Those are the years where you see a lot more ads on TV. Those are the years that we typically see turnout closer to the 50-60% range. In an off year, which is what we're in this year, turnout typically is mid-20s, low-30s. We think that we're on pace to go way beyond that this year, though, because of those issues we spoke about. And so this is the year when mayors and city council members and school board members and township trustees and folks like that are on the ballot. And so it's a staggered system. So the even-numbered years, you see more federal and state. The odd years, you see local officials and local candidates.
Okay, so the resources are there for young people to vote. Registering is easy. Voting is easy. Understanding the issues takes a little more time, but not much, especially if you keep up on the news throughout the year. But some people might say politicians are corrupt, and no matter what I do, they won't actually listen to the common people. So why should I make the effort at all? Nathan says that this isn't a great excuse for people to not vote.
The fact is that there are going to be people elected every year, and so if they may be unhappy with the tone of past debates or with what people have done once they've got in office, that's an issue, and that they can certainly feel that way, but we are electing new people. And so part of the great thing about our political process here is that if you don't like the people who are in power, you can throw them out, but you can't if you don't participate. And so I think that that's certainly part of it, that people are turned off by politics. And of course, the negativity and the ads don't help with that. But the bottom line is that we are electing leaders regardless. And so I would argue that that's probably not a good reason not to vote.
Basically, if a person doesn't give the voter what they promised or wanted, it's up to the voter to vote them out the next time, sending a message to that politician, as well as many others, that the people want to be thought about and that they want the promises kept. It's a pretty simple idea, but it's something we don't take full advantage of. Peg says that on one hand, she can completely see where non-voters are coming from, but on the other hand, she can't.
I can sympathize. I mean, I can get frustrated. It may come as a shock, but, you know, they don't pay a lot of attention to me very often. And I know I'm right. But the alternative is to give up. And I can't see giving up. I can't be apathetic.
But at least, if nothing else, there are many great voter advocacy organizations washing our backs, trying to make sure that every vote counts and is counted correctly, and that being a voter remains as easy as it is now. The League of Women Voters, for example, has been tackling the issue of redistricting for many years.
The League has been trying to get redistricting, the process, reformed since the 1970s. One of our former state presidents got involved with it in 1974. She's the one who suggested that we needed to have a competition, which we did 2 years ago and then again this year, to show not just our theory that we can do a better job than the political system does, but we demonstrated we could do a better job. We had a competition and anybody could enter, and they used the same materials, and they came out with much better maps. They shouldn't be all designed the way, frankly, many of the gerrymandered ones are, so that it guarantees either a Republican or a Democrat will win the district, which makes the elected official unaccountable. If you know you can be reelected, you don't have to pay attention to the voters. The purpose of it is to give voters the chance to pick their politicians instead of what we now have, which is the politicians are picking their voters. That's the kind of thing that makes people think, why should I bother?
Identification requirements was another hot topic among the League of Women Voters, and one which is still not fully settled.
There's been a proposal, there's a bill in the legislature, and it's passed in many other states, that would require a photo ID that would require either an Ohio driver's license or an Ohio ID. And not only did we vehemently oppose this, but so did every other advocacy group I know. What really helped kill it, I think, is the Ohio Secretary of State said, we don't need this. We don't need this to prevent fraud in Ohio.
There was a piece of state legislation, House Bill 194, that was a really large, comprehensive election reform bill. But that is not in effect for this election, and it's not going to be in effect for the primary election in 2012 either. There was a referendum effort filed against that bill, and so it's on hold. And so right now, the law actually hasn't changed. And so the forms of ID that are required to come in and vote on Election Day haven't changed.
These IDs, according to the Board of Elections website, include a current and valid photo identification, such as an Ohio driver's license card, state ID card, or government ID, a military identification, or a copy of a current utility bill within the last 12 months, including cell phone bills, bank statement, paycheck, government check, or other government document, including from a public college or university, that shows the voter's name and current address.
One of the things that's really spectacular about the Board of Elections is the transparency here. Everything we do is open for public view. You know, observers can come in and watch watch everything we do, basically. And state law actually provides that boards of elections be governed by bipartisan bodies. And so that's why you see two Republicans and two Democrats sitting on our four-member board. That ensures that one party isn't overseeing elections and that it's split down the middle. And our staff here is split right down the middle as well. And I'm very proud of the way we operate. But there's nothing worse than feeling like something went not quite right in an election. And we've seen that on a big stage in the past in some other states. And when we talk about running fair and smooth elections here, our goal is to make sure that no voter ever feels like something's not quite right here in Franklin County.
But people still may argue that their vote doesn't make a difference. What is one vote among millions? The League of Women Voters has an amazing response to this question, which they call the voting power of one.
Oh, when I worked in the Secretary of State's office for a number of years, and I used to keep a file folder of one vote elections. And this is the kind of year, the municipal elections, when we will have tie votes in Ohio. Because Ohio is so closely divided politically, we will have tie votes in these local elections. Don't tell me nobody ever makes a difference, because we have elections in this state every year that are divided, that is close. And think about what happens with the school levy that wins or loses by one vote or a tie, and they have to decide it by flipping a coin.
The League of Women Voters of Ohio lists a couple of instances in which one vote made the difference. They say that, quote, John F. Kennedy's margin of victory over Richard Nixon in 1960 was less than one vote per precinct, and that one vote per precinct passed women's suffrage in California in 1911. More recently, Pegg cites the small margin of victory between George W. Bush and Al Gore in Florida, and tells a story of a Marine whose one vote was disputed in court that would determine whether his own father won mayor or not. Okay, so this only addresses a few of the reasons why citizens don't vote. But if nothing else, voting is our right that so many people have fought to have and so many people still want, and it doesn't hurt to take advantage of it. No one can vote until they are 18 years old, but there are still plenty of ways for young students to get involved in the political process. There is this idea that the earlier on you get involved, the more likely you are to participate later. Nathan Bird explains a few of the campaigns he and the Board of Elections work on.
Well, we actually work really closely with an organization called Kids Voting Central Ohio. I'm actually honored to be a board member with this group, and they do a lot of programs in public schools all over the county. They'll hold mock elections, which is really, really fun for the students because it teaches them how to educate themselves on the candidates. What they actually do is city by city, they'll actually take what's on the real ballot and let students vote. Now, of course, those results don't count towards the official count, but what it does is it helps students get used to voting, and it helps students understand why they should vote. And so Kids Voting Central Ohio is an absolutely fantastic organization. We support them financially. We also run a program called Youth at the Booth, which is for 17 and 18-year-old students who actually work the polls for us on election day. We typically have around 1,000 of them on a general election, and what we're finding is that almost all of them stay engaged afterward. They either want to work the polls later, and at a minimum, they go back and they continue to vote. And so there are efforts underway to reach kids who are too young that they're not quite eligible to vote. And I think we've done a good job of working with organizations that are trying to spread the word and spread the message. And so that's one thing we're pretty proud of, is our relationship with Kids Voting. I think that what is good about programs that encourage really young students to understand our process is not so much the nitty-gritty on the issues, but the freedom we have to choose who represents us. Kids can understand that. They understand when they're doing these mock elections, I'm picking who's going to represent me. As they get older and as they get into adult age, I think that the issues then match up with the ability to pick our leaders.
In addition to these two organizations, PEG encourages students who are not yet able to vote to get involved in other ways, like work the polls or answer phones, help out with voting organizations, or do call centers for candidates and issues.
You can still get involved in campaigns. I remember working on a campaign, and there was a four-year-old sitting there sticking stamps on envelopes. If you're dependable and trustworthy and they show up and stuff, you get to do interesting things. students aren't very experienced yet. That's true. But everybody has to start off someplace, and stuff in politics, by and large, is not. It's complicated, but it doesn't take advanced degrees. It just takes paying attention. And you'll never know it all. I'm still having those moments of the, oh, I never thought of that. And that'll always happen. But what's wrong with that?
I actually volunteered at a call center for my high school levy. It was pretty fun, and I came out understanding a lot more about the issue than I did going in. I heard both sides on why some people wanted it and others did not. One of the amazing things about voting for the first time, which doesn't mean you should only vote for the first time, is that the moment generally sticks with you. Peg talks about how at 21, the voting cutoff used to be 21. She anticipated voting for the first time, but had to settle for helping out at the polls instead.
I was a junior in college, and I could not vote, but I could be involved, and so I was a checker. And so I sat at the polling place and asked people their names as they came in and checked them off so that the party people could come by later and see who hadn't voted yet so they could go out and round up voters and make sure they got in. And then later in the day, I went out with people who we were giving rides for, and I would babysit for their kids while they went in to vote.
This camaraderie still goes on today. During the presidential election especially, it's not shocking to find bus shuttles full of carless students being taken down to vote, or for campaign workers to still carpool voters to the polls. For these people, there is no excuse not to vote. A year after babysitting for voters, Peg voted for the first time and taught her junior and senior high school students how to vote too. Nathan also prizes his first vote.
I remember it very, very well. It was 1996. It was the year I turned 18, and I was a college freshman, and I was going to Ohio State, but my voting residence was still in Licking County, and I split my time pretty evenly between home and school. And I remember going into the voting booth, and I remember voting for the candidate that lost that year, which, of course, stands out in my mind. But I loved it. I mean, you know, I had wanted to vote for years. I mentioned earlier that I grew up with parents who participate in elections regularly and watch the news all the time. So I was ready to vote when I was 13, 14, 15 years old. And so for me, I remember it well. It was a great day. And it troubles me to think that other people don't quite have the same enthusiasm. And, you know, we want to make sure people know that they should participate. But I remember the weather that day. I remember everything about it. I remember walking in and, you know, popping through the Chad back then. It was a different voting system that we had back in the 90s. And, yeah, I have fond memories of it.
As for me, last year was my first time voting, and I was not nearly as prepared as Peg or Nathan. The day of the elections, I woke up with my parents at 5 o'clock in the morning so they could go before work. In the car, it was pitch black, and I was anxiously sitting in the back, scouring through the Columbus Dispatch with the light of my cell phone, reading as much as I could about all of the candidates. Disheveled, nervous, and unprepared, I walked into the gymnasium of the local elementary school. The poll worker asked me if I had voted before, and I told her no. She ushered me back to my booth and showed me how the touchscreen machine worked and let me know I could ask her if I had any questions. I began, and for the issues or candidates I did not know, I simply skipped through. After I was finished, I got a sticker to let the world know that I had voted today. And although I was unsure whether I made the right decision and kept promising myself I would prepare better next year, I proudly wore my sticker all day. I probably could have sat around and worked on nothing the rest of the day and still felt as though my day was worthwhile. I hope that everyone goes out and votes on November 8th, or if you didn't get to register this year, that you register right now and vote in the very important presidential election next year. This has been another episode of Youth Beat Radio. You can check us out on the web at youthbeat.osu.edu or email us at youthbeat@osu.edu. You can also find us on Facebook, where we will be posting links and photos related to our show. I'm your host, Anna Siriano. Thank you for listening.
Sunrise and sunset. Since the beginning, it hasn't changed yet. I say some people.
Youth Beat Radio is produced by youth from Central Ohio high schools, youth groups, and universities. The program is sponsored by the School of Environment and Natural Resources at The Ohio State University, Ohio State University Extension, and local sponsors. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the station or the sponsors.